This is Amarin's.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 16 of my podcast. It's Tuesday, June 12th, 2007. Now, this episode, I'm just basically going to be talking about some listener feedback, some emails I've gotten, and then there's an extensive comment section that I need to go over. And that's really pretty much going to be it for this particular episode. But before I get into that, I wanted to clarify something from Friday's episode about the no nukes. When I was talking about the legislation, I said that Parliament banned visits from nuclear-powered and propelled ships. And of course, that's the same thing. What I meant to say was nuclear-powered or armed ships, because what the nuclear ban was really about was banning nuclear weapons from New Zealand. Now, this is partly in response to the comments, the review, or summary, I guess, that Mike Hipp had on podcastsoup.net, because I think I might have been a bit misleading about all that. We don't have nuclear power, and I don't know that it's actually technically banned under the nuclear-free legislation, but it probably is. But at the moment, we have no particular need for nuclear power because we have abundant energy sources in the form of hydropower and wind power, renewable sources like that, and also geothermal power, and also some coal-fired power, which we have our own coal and things like that. One day it may be a different story, but at this stage there's just no need for a nuclear power plant, and there'd be, like in most of the Western world, there'd be a lot of resistance to putting one in. I mean, where would you put it exactly? So at this stage there's very little likelihood that there would be a nuclear power plant in New Zealand. But Mike had wondered, basically, well, aren't most nations nuclear-free? And that's actually true, they are. But being nuclear-free is more than just the absence of nuclear weapons or nuclear power. In the case of New Zealand, New Zealand was the first nation to actively declare itself nuclear-free as opposed to just not having nuclear weapons or nuclear power. It may seem like a semantic difference, but the real point of it was that it was New Zealand standing up, primarily to the United States, it must be said, and saying, we don't want any part of this, we don't want to have nuclear weapons here, we don't want to be associated with nuclear weapons, we want nothing to do with it. And to date, no other country has done that. It's just that some countries have since New Zealand went nuclear-free, more countries have developed nuclear weapons, and I think others have installed nuclear power plants. But no country has declared itself nuclear-free since New Zealand did it. So that's just a little bit of clarification from last week that I wanted to get out of the way. Now, on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, I had posed a question basically saying, you know, if there's anything that anybody wanted to know or anything that they wanted me to answer, they should, you know, put a comment on the blog or send me an email, which is true in general. I mean, I'm always open to questions because I'm sure that there are things that I'm not thinking to talk about that you might be curious about. So, you know, feel free to leave a comment or send me an email about things that you want to know about. But I did get an email from an expat American, and as you know, my policy, if you want to call it that, is that I don't read, I don't identify email senders personally unless they tell me I can. Just because I perceive of it as more of a personal communication. So this person, an expat American living in New Zealand, was asking me about poverty in New Zealand and whether, basically, why they were constantly being hit up for donations to various charity things for poor people and whatnot when they had been led to understand there wasn't any homelessness in New Zealand. And the answer to that is that there actually isn't any homelessness in New Zealand, not in the sense that we Americans would understand it anyway. Most of the homelessness in New Zealand is homelessness by choice, which is to say it's people who have chosen to live out on the streets. Now, granted, many of them are alcoholics or drug users or perhaps with mental issues, but they're not a threat to themselves or to society, and so they're perfectly free to choose to live out on the streets if that's what they want to do. There's no law against it. In most cases, people can sleep out. It's called sleeping rough, if they want. And in a free society, people ought to be free to make a choice that most of us would probably find appalling, or at least not something we'd want to do. However, there is a problem with poverty in general, as there is in all developed countries. And the problem here is primarily one of substandard housing or overcrowded housing, those sorts of things. So all of the major cities have city missions, which try to cater to these poor. They run soup kitchens, and they also have food pantries where they hand out parcels to needy families, or needy people, I should say. Now, the soup kitchens aren't just for the homeless or the destitute and whatnot. A lot of the people who go to them are poor or marginally poor, and also elderly people who their pensions don't stretch quite far enough. And also, to be fair, it gives them a social outlet that they otherwise might not have, particularly if they're all alone, which is, of course, not to say that all elderly people do that, because they don't. But that's part of why it exists. Now, the food pantry is a whole other matter. It's for people who have hit hard times for whatever reason, and they've run out of food, run out of money for the week, and they can't afford to buy food, those sorts of things. And those people can come from any class. I mean, because let's face it, any one of us at any point could find a week where we're really quite short. And that's essentially what they're for. And so it's quite common in larger New Zealand companies to have, say, a bin where people can drop off tinned fruit or whatever it might be, dried goods, whatever, that then the pantries can give out in food parcels. So that's common. Collecting for organizations dealing with the poor is a little bit less common, but most of them, I suspect, are probably for overseas work. And a lot of those are Christian organizations who, quite frankly, put evangelism ahead of poverty relief. And so I'm always suspicious of them. But it used to be said that, in general, about poverty in New Zealand, that New Zealand had the world's richest poor people. And that may have been true at one time, back in the days of Fortress New Zealand, when everything was all closed in. I think it's much less true now, certainly since maybe the 1970s or 80s onward, particularly since the 1980s with all of the neoconservative market reforms and whatnot. They had a devastating effect on the poor and the lower middle classes as well. And some of them still haven't recovered, going on the better part of 20 years. In parts of the country, in distant rural areas, say in Northland or East Cape or places like that, you may find houses that are clearly substandard. They may not have power or running water, and they may just be surrounded by other poor people and no hope or prospect of jobs of any sort. And it's really, really hard in those areas, and that's what a lot of the relief agencies try to deal with these areas to make sure the people are well cared for. They don't always succeed, but they do try. But it's also true that in, say, parts of Auckland, which is, of course, New Zealand's largest city, there will be pockets of really extreme poverty, particularly in South Auckland, which has a high Maori and Pacific Islander population, many of whom tend to be poor, especially the Pacific Islanders who may not even speak English very well. And they very often have large families living in one house, probably too small a house. And historically, there's been a huge problem with meningococcal disease in that part of the country because of the overcrowding. Now, there is a vaccine available that is beginning to show results in curbing that. It's free vaccine. But there are still problems with South Auckland and the overcrowding and whatnot. But the poverty that you see in New Zealand is quite different from what you see in most American cities. Not all American cities, because if you compare it size for size, what happens in Auckland is probably comparable to a similar-sized city in America, maybe. Again, depending on the city. So there is poverty in New Zealand, as there is in all developed countries. There's also great wealth in New Zealand as well, as you'd expect. And there's a huge gap between rich and poor. But there just isn't the kind of poverty that we Americans are used to, and there certainly isn't homelessness as we Americans are used to. So that was all based on an email that was sent to me. And if there's if there's anything that you'd like to know about or like to ask me or whatever, feel free to leave a comment or send me an email to amarins@yahoo.com, and I will similarly answer those. Now, I'm going to go on to the comments on episode 15, No Nukes, because there's some quite lengthy comments. Well, one lengthy comment. And so it's probably going to take up quite a bit of time. So I'll just get right into it. Calvin said, "I was totally interrupted while listening to your podcast at the gym this morning. Here I am on the elliptical. What's an elliptical? Anyway, here I am on the elliptical, listening to Nuclear Disarmament, when right next to me on the next machine, some super cute, toned, muscular young Latin guy starts staring at me for like 15 seconds at a time. After 2 to 3 times, I had to finally take off my earbuds and talk to him. Christ, he even lives with his identical gay twin, but the twin also has a partner who is living with them. Why am I so simultaneously lucky and unlucky? Anyway, I really enjoyed your discussion on the nuclear free zones. And what's so bad about having communist aspirations? I'm tired of people badmouthing communism. I don't know that much about Bloomberg, but I also share your distrust of the free market. Big surprise, eh? Hope all is well. And I said, I've got to scroll down. This is going to take me a second, because it's way down. Okay. I said, sounds like your listening environment was more interesting than what you were listening to. How disappointing that there weren't further details to share. Because that actually probably would have been more interesting, but maybe that's just me. Mike said, love it when you inform us on New Zealand politics. The discussion about how a no-nuclear policy is central to the national identity was fascinating. And I said, thanks for the feedback. There'll be more about New Zealand politics when I have something specific to illustrate it, like an election or maybe an event in the news. Now, we do have elections coming up in New Zealand. We have what are called local body elections, which is for local government. And those will be held in October, I think it is. And about the same time, Australia will be having its federal elections, which might be interesting. We'll see. And the next parliamentary elections won't be until next year sometime, probably late, maybe sometime between September and October of 2008. So that's quite some time away at this stage. But nevertheless, when the time comes around, I'm certainly going to be talking about that more, talk about the elections more, because it's a good way of talking about New Zealand's electoral structure without getting bogged down in all sorts of details that may not be clear or easy to understand. I think that if I talk about it in the context of people and specific events, that it might be easier to follow, especially if you can then go and read news stories from the mainstream news media about the sorts of things I'm talking about. It'll all make more sense. However, if I'm wrong, tell me. Larkin said, Arthur, thanks for the info on Callbox 7. I've downloaded all 4 of their shows, and I'm going to listen to them tomorrow on my drive to the Bay Area. I totally agreed with your assessments of the brouhaha and the occasional fag. You took the words right out of my mouth, but you stated them much more eloquent than I ever could have. Thank you. I said, I'm glad that you gave Callbox 7 a listen. I really enjoy it, but I'd be curious to know what you thought about it. Thanks for the compliment on what I said about the debate on the occasional fag, but I feel like I only scratched the surface. And that was actually kind of deliberate that I didn't talk about it in more detail because, I mean, it wasn't my show that this all happened on. So I felt a little bit constrained. I didn't want to get into this one podcast talking about another podcast sort of thing. I just wanted to share some of my reactions to what I heard. Also, in case you went and listened to it yourself, you might be interested in sharing some of your reactions as well. But as the main thing was just that I felt that I certainly didn't want to re-debate the debate, but I just wanted to share some of my reactions, I guess. And speaking of that, is the next comment from Chef Mark from the Remarkable Palate and Remarkably Mark and others. this is a bit long, and I'm going to occasionally break it up with some comments other than what I actually wrote. So I'm just preparing in case you want to pause for a moment to go get a cup of tea or something. He said, I've been thinking more and more about that debate, which he puts in quote marks, on the occasional fag, and regret that I fell into the trap of arguing so easily. I would rather have made the effort to be silent and just come in once or twice with important points. It's something that I have made a concerted effort to do in my life since I used to be much more confrontational and to turn people off a lot. I really buy into the honey versus vinegar thing now. I realized that I was not at all prepared for what the conversation would be. David just invited me to be on a group podcast, and I walked into the topic. To your comments. He's referring now to the comments from my podcast. I would indeed say that we don't live under any kind of true free market. However, I don't have unwavering faith in the notion of free markets, as you assert. I believe in reason, after all, not faith. I have unwavering support for trying to make the market freer. I tend to be more on the side of limiting the rampant regulation of enterprise. Nothing gets created when there are tight strictures on entrepreneurship. China has learned from this, and even the world's largest communist state is becoming the world's biggest free market economy. Who'd have thunk it? Interesting side note, I think one of the biggest misconceptions is equating corporations with entrepreneurs. They are, by definition, opposites. To lump all business people together is a huge mistake, and sadly, corporations by their very nature tend to act more like bureaucracies with regard to individuals or small businesses, namely, that they feel it's better to dominate them than to allow them to trade freely. Bureaucrats would control individuals with regulation, and big corporations would do it through throwing around their considerable economic weight. Both are enemies of true free market competition, although they may at times claim to support it. All animals are equal, it's just that some animals are more equal than others. Okay, this is me again. I agree with the things that Mark's been saying. And I particularly agree with what he's saying about how there's a big difference between corporations and entrepreneurs, and they're not all the same. They're certainly not all bad either, as I was saying in the last podcast. Although I was talking specifically about rich people, it's equally true of corporations, that not all corporations are necessarily evil. It's just that many are. And I'm going to return to that a little bit later after all the comments are done. Anyway, Mark goes on. As for the greed that goes on in some corporations, you're spot on. You said it well with your comment that the expectation of reward for an investment is at times out of all proportion of what is put in, and most wealth, in quote marks, now is created by shuffling pieces of paper back and forth in a poker game where we bet on each other. This is one of the core principles that I live by, that of the earned versus unearned. In fact, I think it's immoral to derive benefit from what you have not created. I think there are even whole professions built on immoral earning of money. One of my former best friends owns a hedge fund and has made millions by shorting medical technologies that he feels won't pan out in the marketplace. Not always because they aren't good, but because they just aren't ready, or because people expect immediate gains, or because the government has made it unfavorable for these technologies to succeed. So he's hoping that good ideas that could help people fail in order to turn a profit. Watching him work, and I used to sit with him as he made his buying and selling choices, sometimes moving up to $10 million at a time, it slowly became clear to me that he is making money not by creating, but by hoping for destruction. As good as I was at trading, in quotes, I realized that it was bad for my soul, since it was not based on investing, nor in any creation of my own, and over time I had a falling out with this friend who had grown rich from this practice. Now, of course, my business is built on creating things, either literally, with my hands, or with the output of ideas. I feed people, a noble pursuit, and one that, in this culture, I can make a really good living at. I absolutely agree with you that there is a place for regulation, since abuses do happen. The framers saw the need for this in the way that they built the The framers saw the need for this in the way they built our government. I don't know why that was so hard for me to say. Anyway, sorry. They were not naive enough to think that some degree of government was not necessary, but I think it's more valuable that the shift away from rampant greed happen from within the ranks of the people rather than with a fist of governments. Greed and power are flip sides of the same coin, and as we see with government, using one to crush the other is simply rearranging deck chairs. I was definitely being tongue-in-cheek about the progressives being closer to communists. I was trying to get at the point that so many so-called progressives actually operate under a strong assumption that government necessarily should fix everything and therefore must be turned to. It's a paternal attitude that makes the state our nanny and has contempt for the ability of individuals to make good choices for themselves. I get at this in my comment about not respecting the voters. I also listened to Call Box 7 the other day, and I liked what he had to say about progressives being practical. I just don't think that governments can mandate people to do the right thing, just as it's difficult for a parent to make their child do the right thing. Freedom means being free to make even the wrong choices, wrongs in quotes. And we grow, whether as individuals or societies, to the extent that we can learn from our mistakes. My biggest assertion, as I'm sure you know from hearing me on different podcasts, is that we can change ourselves and the world only through personal responsibility, recognizing that we are the generators of our experiences, and the creators of our results is amazingly empowering, and frees us from the matrix, that's in quotes, that is this endless partisan debate. It's so easy to define ourselves as to the opposite of our opponents, and get caught in meaningless back and forth. We saw how easy that was in this discussion. I try to live by this principle, yet I easily fell into the matrix. So ingrained in our social structure it is, and had an easy time getting stuck in parrying back and forth. Thanks for putting up with this long-winded response. It helped me to say better some of the things I meant to say in the discussion, and I think we'll cross-post this, if you don't mind, to the Occasional Fags. Love you. And I thought that was a great response. I just wish I could have read it better, but I got a bit tongue-twisted. Sorry, Mark, I didn't do you justice. I should have had you read it for me. But I thought he made some really good points there. And in my written response, I said, what a great reply. I actually don't disagree with what you're saying overall. In fact, in thinking about it, the one point where I might disagree is that while people have responsibility for educating themselves about candidates and elections, expecting them to do so discounts the enormous influence of the media, peer groups, and so on. I don't know what can be done about that, but I think it's quite difficult for people to get and act on good information, no matter how much they might reasonably try. I look forward to discussing this further with you, and I'm actually hoping at some stage that we can record together and talk about this in more detail. I ideologically or philosophically or whatever am all over the map on a lot of different issues, and I don't have one set philosophy. I'm not like all left or all right, or even necessarily all center. I'm a little bit of everything. I'm a mutt. But I do tend to think that that personal responsibility is important, and I don't think that it's valued enough, that people really ought to be encouraged to take more responsibility for their own actions and the consequences of their actions. I mean, a prime example of that is in my mind, is going on right now in New Zealand and probably throughout the U.S. as well. And that's with the people who are cooking pure methamphetamine, which, if I remember correctly, is called crystal meth in the U.S. We call it P for pure methamphetamine, and in Australia, I think they call it ice. At any rate, these people who are making it create this huge problem. First of all, it's highly explosive, and they frequently do explode. And when they do, and the emergency services come, case in point, there was a P-lab that exploded somewhere north of Auckland, I can't remember where exactly, not too long ago. And there were two men there who were badly burned when it happened. And so they were taken away, and they required $100,000 worth of treatment. Well, actually, only one of them died. The other required $100,000 worth of treatment and will require ongoing treatment as well. The lab itself was a total write-off, of course, but the emergency services personnel who responded, the firemen, the ambulance officers, the police, all had to be decontaminated. The rescue helicopter that flew the injured men to the hospital had to be decontaminated and was out of service for 5 hours. Now, if there had been a real emergency, which is to say, an accident or, say, a heart attack or whatever, and they had to get somebody to the hospital, that helicopter was not available because those two men chose to make an illegal drug knowing the risks, and they could not have known the risks. So they made a choice, a bad choice as it happens, but they made a choice to cook this illegal drug. It exploded, it injured them. What responsibility does society have back toward them? My point here is that if responsibility means you're responsible for doing the right thing, does society then have the responsibility to come and say, no matter what you do, good, bad, or indifferent, we will take care of you? It seems that there ought to be some sort of a trade-off there between people who are caught through no fault of their own in, say, an accident or something like that, and those who create the problems themselves. It's a similar case with drunk drivers, people who drive drunk and cause an accident. They may take hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of medical care to be put back to rights. They might kill somebody as a result of their drunk driving. To what extent does society owe them the same courtesies that they would give to somebody who is a victim through no fault of their own? And I think it's an interesting discussion, and I don't have any answers, I have to say, because, I mean, a humane society can't refuse to treat somebody just because their injuries were the result of their own ignorance or their own actions or what have you. But by the same token, I'm not necessarily sure that they shouldn't have to pay it back. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear what others think about all of that, because it's a growing problem. Certainly the whole bit about crystal methamphetamine is a growing problem in most Western countries. It's a serious problem, but it's not the only one. There's plenty of other less serious instances where society is left to pick up the pieces because somebody's made a bad choice. And it's something that we should think about more, I think, and not just take at face value that anything goes, which is pretty much the alternative, I suppose, the alternative position. Anyway, that's enough of my speech. Archer said, "Oh my, the comments are flying. What are the chances of the U.S. ever becoming nuclear-free? No chance. We're too busy telling others that they can't have nuclear weapons. We're full of ourselves. I don't know what to do with Facebook or MySpace either. I created the pages, and they're just there. I don't know what to do with them." I'm laughing because I think the same thing. Anyway, he says, "That was a fun debate we had on the occasional fag. We need more debates like that and have more people hear them." And I said, "I agree that the U.S. is unlikely to go nuclear-free. Still, one can hope. I'm not on Facebook because I can't figure out what to do with MySpace, and I don't need another thing sitting around unused." The debate on the occasional fag was good, in that I think it's always good for the GLBT communities to discuss things rather than just follow some leaders. I'm just not sure that that particular debate helped all that much. Which I suppose is a bit snarky to say, but it's nothing against the hosts or the panelists necessarily. It's just it was all the shouting all over each other that made it really difficult to even follow the debate, much less understand what they were talking about. Now, just a couple of miscellaneous things at the end here. I said I was going to come back to this later. I had talked a bit about greed in the last podcast, and Mark referred to it in his comments. And I just wanted to share with you what's at the core of my thinking about that. And that's that there's been what I call a paradigm shift for business over the past some odd years. And I don't know when it happened. It may have been gradual. I don't know. But time was, businesses have always been about trying to maximize their profits. I mean, that's what people are in business for. And, you know, fair enough. That's what we expect. But it used to be that you tried to make the best possible product or service that you could, you sold it at a fair price, and you tried to build market share to increase your profits. Nowadays, the business paradigm has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with the fair return for products or services. It's all about maximizing return to shareholders. And that's essentially what I was getting at in the last podcast. The money that goes to shareholders, it has no connection whatsoever to what the company does, except that whatever the company does is what makes that money that is returned to shareholders. But many, many large corporations are underinvesting in their capital or their people, human capital or physical capital, because they're so obsessed with returning money to shareholders. And it's all out of kilter nowadays. And that's really what I was getting at when I was talking about greed. It's the greed of the shareholders demanding immediate returns. And you see it all the time. You see it when, say, General Motors makes a profit, but not as big as shareholders wanted, so their share price plummets. That's one example. Or they don't make quite as much profit as they want, so they lay off tens of thousands of workers. It's not right. But I don't know what to do about it. It's not the sort of thing where the government can step in and say, "You're being evil bastards and we have to deal to you." And yet, it's not veering all that far away from that sort of behavior. I just wish there was some sort of corrective force that could come in and make business go back to what it's supposed to be about, which is making a fair profit, a fair return for a fair effort. But I don't know that there's any way of doing that short of just, I don't know, hoping for a better day. Right, and then the last thing that I want to talk about is Frapper. Now, I haven't talked about that in a long time, in part because I went for a long time without any new additions. But I do have three since the last time I talked about it, and they are Robert from New York, Matt from Sacramento, and Eric in D.C. I'm not sure if that's Eric and D.C. or Eric in D.C., but in any case, three new Frappers. So, you know, by all means, feel free to add yourself to my Frapper map. And just to give you a heads up on what I'm working on, I am trying to get together some interviews or some groups or whatever, well, me and another person, on the podcast. But as I said before, I have had some trouble with time zones, but the main people I'm working on are people who are not in any way connected with podcasting, but they are in some way either connected with me or New Zealand or something like that. And I don't have all the details sorted out yet, so I really can't say any more than that. But I'm also working on getting a digital recorder so that I can go out in the world and talk to people out there, because obviously I can't talk to everybody over Skype, much as I might like to. And that's probably some, that might yet be some weeks away, but I'm hoping that I can make that happen too. So I'll keep you posted as I know more about that. And that is it for this Tuesday edition. I hope I didn't bore you too much with talking about just feedback things instead of a particular topic. But as I say, feel free to send any questions that you might have to me. Either leave a comment at amrins.blogspot.com or send an email to me at amrins@yahoo.com. That's it for Tuesday. I'll talk to you again on Friday. Thanks for listening. Bye.